sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Today and every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs on Negro life, based on the theme of Roy Ottley's book, New World A-Coming, starring Canada Lee. Today, we present an original story, Heroes of the Skies, dedicated to the gallant Negro flyers of the United States Army Air Corps, written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Grayson.
ME 109, 11 o'clock. Lowell, see him?
Yeah, I see him. I'll take care of him. This one's for my kids.
If you get into trouble, I'll come down and we'll both finish him off.
Roger.
Eddie, are you hurt? Eddie, answer me.
Hurt? Who, me?
Oh, I thought something happened to you.
Not to me. I'm okay.
Let's open up and get back to the field.
Wait a minute. Hey, Bob.
What is it, Eddie?
Look straight ahead of us, coming out of the sun.
What's up?
6, 8 enemy fighters coming straight at us.
I see them.
Here they come. Look out, Bob.
Outnumbered the way we were, we didn't have a chance. Eddie managed to get one, and I got another. But they got Eddie. My plane caught on fire, and I bailed out with a piece of lead in my chest. But Eddie, his ship was his coffin. I saw his plane plummeting to the earth, and I saw his grave. It was marked only by smoke and seared grass somewhere in Italy. I'd like to tell you about Eddie, because I think you ought to know what he died for. You see, Eddie and I are Negroes, and we were buddies together from the first day of training school. I was in our quarters when he came in.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to disturb you. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Come on in. I'm only unpacking, that's all. Have you been assigned to this room?
Yes, I have.
Well, come on in and make yourself at home.
Oh, thanks.
Let me give you a hand with your bag.
Okay. Oh, but be careful with that one. My wife's picture's in it.
You married?
Yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thanks. How about you?
Oh, knock on wood. Bob Anderson's my name. What's yours?
Eddie Smith.
Where you from, Eddie?
New York City. And you?
Chatham, Alabama.
North and South. Let's shake hands.
That's the way we met, Eddie and I. He was a young lawyer and just passed his bar exam before he joined up. When he unpacked his bag, he put his wife's picture on the dresser. She didn't look like any movie star, but anyone could tell that she was an intelligent and attractive girl. Eddie noticed my interest and started telling me about her.
Well, you see, she's a wonderful girl. She works as a secretary in a government housing project. She likes good music, she dresses simply, and she makes good sense.
Yeah. You got a sister?
No. Mm-mm. There's only one like her in the whole world.
You're in love, brother.
You said it. I certainly am.
Well, tell me more about her.
Well, you see, she's a girl I can talk to about everything, openly and frankly. Our futures, the home we'll live in after the war, children, and even the future of our people in America.
I remember tossing that last remark off with a shrug. I was going to ask him more about what he meant by the future of our people in America. But someone came in the room and said,
"Assemble downstairs on the main field in 5 minutes. Commanding officer wishes to speak to all flying personnel. 5 minutes on the main field."
We fixed our ties, put our hats on, and a couple of minutes later we were on the field. The colonel stood on a small platform in front of the 257 men, pilots and members of the ground crews. He looked very seriously at us. his eyes moving slowly from one man to the next.
Gentlemen, this is your first day here at Tuskegee Airfield. I wanted to have a short talk with you. This 99th Fighter Squadron is the first of its kind in the Army Air Forces and is therefore of historic importance to our people. Frankly, we are looked upon as an experiment, as a test of whether or not the Negro can fly as combat fighters in this war. Upon each and every one of us rests the responsibility of proving that we can fly. Because very simply, men, the future of the Negro in the Air Corps depends on us, on what we do here. That's all. Thank you.
That night, a young pilot came into our room, and the three of us sat around having a smoke and talking. His name was Charlie Franklin, and he was a student of journalism from Chicago University.
I don't know how you fellows feel about it, but I didn't like that word the CO used about us this afternoon.
What word?
Experiment. Looks to me like this is going to be another here-we-go-again department.
What do you mean, Charlie?
Well, simply this. Why do we Negroes have to be singled out and called an experiment? They don't call white fighters experiments. Fellows go to training school and they either make it or they get washed out. They're not made to feel that they're in a cage with a burning spotlight on them and...
Well, that's because Negroes never flew planes in the Army before.
Well, that's... The same thing holds true with every other cadet now training at flying schools, not only Negroes.
I see what you mean, Charlie.
And another thing. Why did they spend all that money to build a large airfield here at Tuskegee, then put only 27 flyers here and a little over 200 fellows in the ground crew? There's an Army airfield only a few miles from here, a big one. Thousands and thousands of Army trainees and personnel there. If they put us in with those fellows, we wouldn't even be noticed. No, they chose this place, just so we'd be segregated. And you see what I mean by the here-we-go-again department?
I don't know, Charlie. I think maybe we're better off training by ourselves.
Well, why, Bob?
Well, for one thing, we wouldn't have to put up with some of the insults the Negroes get at lots of white camps, especially in the South.
Well, now, if that's the reason behind this segregated airfield, then why was it built in the South?
I don't know.
It should have been built in the far West, any place but the South.
I guess you have a point there.
What do you think about it, Eddie?
Well, I think that's all besides the point. Look, the planes we fly all have the same white stars on them. The winged emblems on our shoulders are the same. The brass markers on our collars are the same. U.S., United States. There's no difference, white or colored, in any of those things. It shouldn't be different at training schools, flying fields, or in combat against the enemy. If it is different, then it's like a Jim Crow train where a white man sits one place and a Negro sits somewhere else, separated apart. And that doesn't help to make us better soldiers.
Well, do you think anything can be done about it?
Charlie, now you're a second lieutenant in the Army Air Corps. And you've got one job ahead of you. The job of helping to finish off Hitler and the Japs.
Yeah, and forget everything else that's rotten here at home.
No. I'm not a killer. But a thought came to me the other day while I was flying my plane toward a target. My machine gun accidentally went off. In that instant, a lot of things became clear to me.
You didn't get hurt, did you?
No. But I learned the difference between life and death is one little bullet.
Frighten me when you talk like that, Eddie?
No, it shouldn't frighten you, Amy, because when I landed that plane that day, it made me realize a lot of things. I got to thinking about the way most of our people live, thinking how their houses are in the worst sections of the city, how they're given only the lowest paying and dirtiest jobs, how they're discriminated against and segregated.
That's no lie.
And that's what I was thinking. And, Amy, all that's got to change. Gosh, I've had it pretty easy because my family could afford to send me to college and give me a good education. But walking through Harlem and seeing the dirty, broken-down, overcrowded tenements with kids running around in old rags, undernourished and rickety because they didn't have enough milk when they were babies... Seeing all those things made me think that that's what I'm fighting against. Not only against the Nazis and Japs in Europe and Guadalcanal, but to change the things that are wrong here at home.
What?
The train's leaving, Eddie.
Yeah, but it's not enough to fight against, to be a good soldier. You've got to fight for something. And by gosh, there's plenty I've got to fight for. And one of those things is you, Amy. Another is the kids we'll have after I come back. They've got to grow up in a decent kind of a world where they'll be considered as equals with everybody else.
I don't want you to go, Eddie, but you'll miss your train.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say before leaving, Amy. Now I've said it. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, Eddie.
Eddie could put into words what a great many of us felt but couldn't express. Well, finally, our squadron sailed aboard a transport which carried 4,000 men to North Africa. Of this number, only 15% were colored. The rest were white. We bunked together, ate together, shaved together, and shared our fears about German submarines together. Discrimination? Not a sign of it when we left the States and headed toward the actual theater of war. We landed at Casablanca, and from there we went overland to Fez. We were given 27 brand new P-40s, and then sent on missions to bombard the islands of Pantelleria in Sicily. But until we could actually engage the enemy in combat and shoot down at least one German plane, we'd still have to prove ourselves as successful combat fighter pilots. After one particular mission, Eddie was briefed by the CO, and he complained bitterly.
Doggone those Jerry's, Colonel. They just won't fight.
What happened this trip, Eddie?
Well, I thought I was going to get one for sure, but he made one stab at me, and he turned around and flew back home.
That may be a good sign.
Huh? What's that, sir?
Don't be startled, Eddie. They're probably using second-rate pilots because they've lost their best ones.
Yeah, but that's not helping our squadron. We've still got to get our first enemy plane or else that dog tag experiment will hang on to us forever.
It was a problem. All of us were a little on edge, wondering who would be the first to report, "Enemy plane shot down, sir." Then, one day, as our plane started coming back to the field, Eddie landed his ship and taxied slowly to the hangar. His wing was shot up and torn by machine gun and cannon fire. Eddie's face was expressionless. As he climbed out of the plane and walked toward headquarters, in front of the CO, he told what happened.
I saw two of our boys go down. Charlie Franklin was one. I destroyed one German plane, sir. That's all.
Then we were given a long series of monotonous missions, bomber escort and fighter bomber jobs. In the 6 months that followed, we never saw a German plane. Some Air Force officers began to lose what little confidence they had in the outfit. Some said, "The experiment won't work." But the 99th flew on. On the 27th of January, 1944, we took to the air along with a squadron of white flyers who were operating from the same base. Flying over Nettuno, Italy, we met the enemy in force. The men who remained behind anxiously awaited our return. They began to sweat it out, searching the skies, listening for the familiar roar of our war hawks. Then, one by one, our planes started to come in. As we circled past the field into the wind, the men on the ground saw our hands extended out of the planes with thumbs up. Every one of our boys came back. This time, when we lined up in front of the briefing officer, every one of us had a broad smile.
Lieutenant Smith reporting, sir. There were 12 of us and 16 of the enemy. We were 7,500 feet up, and they were 3,000. We dived until we were in their midst. Four of the enemy were on my right. I let one of them have a burst, and his plane cracked up. I saw the German pilot bail out, sir.
Lieutenant Anderson reporting, sir. I picked out my target, a Messerschmitt 109. He tried to dodge, but it was no good. He weaved right into one of my bursts. He flipped right over on his back, crashed, and burned.
Lieutenant Topping's reporting, sir. The ship I shot down was a Fokker.